right, welcome to People Kind Politics. We're doing a People Kind News episode. My name's Matthew.
And my name's Taylor. And now that we are here, we can start off our People Kind News episode with some pretty fucked up news. On June 6th, this is a national story. I'm sure you've heard of it already, but a family was killed by a man in London in what's been described since then and quite immediately after by the police as a deliberate act due to the fact that the family was Muslim. Unfortunately, in this, in this attack, I believe that 4 people were lost, including Salman Afzal, the father, his wife Madiha Salman, their daughter Yumna Afzal, and Salman's mother Talat Afzal, so the grandmother of the family. There was one survivor being their son, who was 9 years old. This was a really devastating thing that happened. It was just this family going out for a walk in the evening, and a truck just came off of the road. They were waiting on the sidewalk to cross at a red light, and the truck swerved off of the road and rammed into them. And that's how that happened. Investigators, like I said, pretty much immediately after said that the family was targeted because of their Muslim faith. And since then, the prosecution in this case has actually introduced terror charges on top of 4 counts of first degree murder and I think 2 counts of terrorism charges. So that would be for the 4 people who were murdered and then as well for the survivor. Yeah, this was brutal stuff. Made national news. It made a lot of people upset, and naturally so. A lot of Muslim people wondering if they can even go for a walk in the evening after this, because again, this was a deliberate attack because of their faith, right? So it's been a lot taken. It's been a couple of weeks now. There's been vigils and everything. And just so everybody knows, the surviving victim has been released from the hospital, and his surviving family is focused on helping him recover and everything. But a lot has already been said, and I don't really know what more we can add to the story, but I did not want to talk about it.
Sure, yeah. When I first heard the news, obviously a horrible, disturbing story, I was immediately reminded of that weirdo in Toronto who ran over and killed up to, I think, around 10 people with his van.
Yeah.
Obviously, the motivations were very different, but just the fact that, you're walking in on a sidewalk on a street and suddenly there's a car coming down on you. I think it's the fact that it's, the motivation obviously being hatred and Islamophobia is bad, but just the way that a normal everyday thing, a vehicle, can be employed to kill, slaughter people is also quite terrifying and horrifying.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about it. I mean, I think about it every day when I cross the road, that people are just driving around 1,000-pound murder vehicles, especially a fucking pickup or an SUV, like, Jesus Christ.
Do you know much about the perpetrator is there much information about him at this point?
Not too much has been released about him. His name is Nathaniel Veltman. He's 20 years old, young white man. Yeah, to me it was surprising when the news broke, especially how fast they came out that it was a racially motivated incident. It was a hate crime, right? He did this deliberately, again, with Islamophobia. The family was Muslim. So I was surprised to see them release that information so quick. I haven't found quite how they came to that conclusion, aside from the crime itself and the fact that, it was just this family who wasn't doing anything, just on the side of the road. And maybe that was enough for them. But yeah, there's not much. He's 20 years old. He's being held in jail right now. Last I saw from this article, like 2 days ago, he doesn't have a lawyer at this time.
Yeah, I guess probably more will come out. And whenever these things happen, a lot of people don't really want to talk about the perpetrator because then, or the killer, you know, the terrorist, they cut because, you know, they see it as glorifying or paying undue attention. But I only ask because, you know, it is to me a very, like, or like, okay, like, morbidly, not morbid curiosity, but just like, how do you get to that place? You know, like, how does someone arrive? Maybe it's not really that mysterious or interesting, but it always kind of, yeah, I wonder about that a lot, how a person can arrive at that place.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, I think in the case of any act of terror, crime, or whatever that's motivated in this way, you mentioned the Toronto case, which I can't remember his last name, Alex Minassian or something, you know, very explicitly was motivated by incel or involuntary celibate.
Ideology.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Ideology. Yeah. And how do we get these young men? I mean, internet. That'd be my first point. You know, I'm not, I mean, I think there's already been so much dissection of these types of people, of people who are radical in a way where they are motivated by hatred. If you are curious, or if anyone's curious, you know, the content is out there. And I would imagine his story isn't much different from anyone else, really. But yeah, the point to getting to the actual act and doing it, yeah, not so many people come to that. So I agree. Knowing more about him would be interesting, but yeah, not really what the focus is right now, and he doesn't have a lawyer or anything, I'm sure. I guess if he doesn't have a lawyer, he hasn't been told not to talk, but I doubt. We just don't know, because, yeah, no info out there. Another interesting thing about it that I wanted to see was kind of how politicians responded, and pretty much, not pretty much, across the board, including liberals, NDPs, conservatives, Bloc Québécois, pretty much every single MP either came out and made a statement or mentioned it in the House, or they did a Twitter post or something denouncing the attack and, you know, Islamophobia and all of that, using that specific language, you know, mentioning Islamophobia, which to me, seeing conservative MPs and especially Bloc MPs use the word Islamophobia was kind of surprising to me, knowing that in the past they have gone directly against bills that speak out about this kind of action, this kind of ideology and hatred and terrorism. So to me, all of that was pretty empty. In particular, I'll mention that O'Toole, our boy, who we did an episode on him, right? Yeah, he made a tweet.
Leader of the Conservative Party.
Yeah, current leader of the Conservative Party. He made a tweet, and he also made a statement in the House, but just talking about how this type of vile and extreme hatred must be condemned, and an Islamophobic act of terror like this has no place in Canada, which is, of course, true, but it just doesn't feel genuine when coming from people like this.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, of course. And I mean, that's always the thing with these, you know, the thing that people make fun of, the thoughts and prayers kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who it does good for, but I also know that if someone didn't say anything, then that would also be bad. So I feel for the politicians, they have to say this kind of blasé, you know, condemnation, unless you're Maxime Bernier, because I don't know what he said.
Yeah, I didn't actually see what he said. I saw what a few unblocked people and just Quebec people in general said, and, you know, again, it's the same thing. I don't feel for them or anything. Like, oh, it must suck so bad to have to put out a generic response on Twitter condemning this awful thing that happened. Like, that's not really hard, which is kind of the point. You know, it's so easy to put out a statement. But when you're voting against, and this was in 2017, I think, but there was a motion introduced in the House by Liberal MP Ikra Khalid, motion 103, which was really just a motion condemning Islamophobia, condemning hatred in general, really, of all religions, all races and all forms of systemic racism and religious discrimination. So that was introduced in the House in 2017. Of course, conservatives and Bloc all voted against it. So some people were bringing that up as well, where, you know, just a couple of years ago. And it really wasn't like this motion, this bill that's introduced, wasn't really introducing any new, like, anything significant. I mean, I wouldn't say it's insignificant, but really it's just introducing a recognition that, you know, Islamophobia is bad and all forms of systemic racism and religious discrimination are bad, which is, you know, true. But it's also a pretty low bar and, like, something that should be easy to say yes to.
Yeah, the dissonance there is pretty cringe, pretty upsetting, I guess, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that bill really would have done, you know, effectively to stop something like this from happening, but at least, but stopping it's kind of a weird, kind of gross thing for me too. So I would want to know why they would do it. I mean, the Quebecois would be for pandering. I assume it's just for pandering to the hateful people that make up the members of these parties, I would imagine.
Right.
Because they're out there, right? In the Quebecois, Bloc Quebecois and conservatives, you do tend to have a more, you do have people who tend to lean more against people from other countries and other religions and whatnot, so.
Yeah, no, it's no surprise why they voted against it. And again, yeah, like I said, it's really just a motion that's being introduced. And this was also, to add context, it was shortly after the attack on the Islamic Cultural Center in Quebec City that left actually 6 people dead and 5 seriously wounded, which is why it was being introduced at that time. So I think it was like less than 2 months after that. And yeah, I agree. Like, certainly that motion in itself saying essentially it's condemning Islamophobia and all forms of, again, systemic racism and religious discrimination. That alone doesn't really do anything. But for me, that's not so. It's more like, because it's really just to make the point. And again, those specific groups won't even do that. And we know why. But just for them to then come forward, you know, 2 years later, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know what year it is, and use the language, like saying Islamophobia when it's probably something they would denounce even existing before. You know what I mean? That's all I'm trying to get out here.
Yep.
But the only other thing I'll add, just to harken back to our boy Trudeau, the current prime minister, the motion I mentioned earlier, 103, he wasn't there for that vote. I assume he would have voted with it because Liberal Party, but, you know, just to note that. And also, naturally, following this, there is, once again, Bill 21 of Quebec is making headlines again. If you don't remember, this is the bill which outright bans women from wearing hijabs and also getting jobs in public sector work.
Well, just anyone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just anyone, but it disproportionately affects women because a lot of those public sector jobs are teacher jobs. But yeah, anyone from wearing any kind of religious, you know, stuff. Wearing anything. So yeah, that's come into the news again, naturally. Anybody who stands by that bill is saying, no, this bill has nothing to do with Islamophobia. And one of the spokespeople of like Quebecois, or maybe not Quebecois, I don't know, I can't keep track, but he was like, yes, it might incite hate, but like, I think we're taking a shortcut here by kind of looking at Bill 21 right now, because you guys just want to be mad at Quebec when this didn't even happen in Quebec. This happened in Ontario, which is true. But when you have an entire province of the country kind of really what I would say is an Islamophobic motion, and just in general, you know, very secular law in place, you know, Quebec doesn't exist in a bubble. And Trudeau at this point has still said he doesn't like Bill 21, but, you know, it's out of his hands. It's up to Quebecers to fight it in court. Shrug. And that's still his stance. I'll also add that he had a really weird take where he said he wouldn't be surprised if people are going to change their minds about religious symbols in Quebec specifically because we've all worn masks for a lot. And receiving services from the state, and also because there's a real concern about the rise in intolerance and Islamophobia, which is just weird to me. like, because we wore masks for COVID, now people are just going to be like, that's going to do it? I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, I do wear masks specifically for religious reasons, so, you know, I see what he's saying. I see what he's getting at there.
Yeah, totally. He hit a mark with you. Trudeau's right for once, confirmed.
That reminds me of, like, I've seen so many pieces, this is a little off topic, but people saying, like, even when the pandemic's over, I'm always wearing a mask.
I'll probably wear one when I get sick. I mean, it makes sense. And they've always done that for a long time in, like, Japan. You get sick less, or you get other people sick less, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that actually does carry on. I don't plan on ever wearing a mask again because it gives me acne and so sweaty.
Yeah, it is sweaty, to be fair. It's nice in the winter, though, when it's cold. I'm like, ooh, a little
warm. You know what else is nice in the winter?
I don't wear scarves. Thanks, though.
Okay.
Nice try. Haha.
Ooh, got him. Well played, Taylor.
Thank you. But yeah, that's actually the end of the story. And yeah, it's still a fucking awful, terrible tragedy. And oof. Yeah, I did see there's a GoFundMe raising money for the kid who lost his entire family. So, you know, if you have $5 to spare, go ahead and throw some money that way. You know, we'll link it in the description. That's what we'll do. But yeah, really awful story. Pretty predictable responses from the politicians. And yeah, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, so that's a pretty heavy topic. We're going to go on to one that's a little bit more strange, I would say, more than anything. So there's a church called the Church of God in Steinbach, Manitoba, or just south of Steinbach. And Steinbach is a very small city in Manitoba, southern Manitoba.
Is it a city?
Boring.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. How many people does it have?
I don't know. But my friend who lives there is like, yeah, we're a city. It's a city, man. We have a movie theater and a Boston pizza. Mm. We're a city.
It's true. They do.
Which
have
I can't
VP.
Can't argue against that. Yeah. But as well as having a Boston pizza and all that stuff, they have this place called the Church of God Restoration, and it's a weird little church. So during the pandemic, of course, you've had these closures of public spaces and private spaces. This has included churches. And a lot of churches have really taken issue with their being closed down and not being able to gather on Sundays or Wednesdays, whenever people do gather for religious gatherings. And so you've had a couple churches around Canada, more than a couple. I think in Manitoba, there's at least 7 that have, you know, gone against the restrictions on gathering, and people have gone to church anyways, and usually not wearing masks or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's a pastor. Maybe I'm doxing a little bit here. But he has a church, and he shut it down. Like, he closed it off. But there are people in his congregation that were pretty upset with this. And they're like, come on, man. The government's trying to shut down our faith, man. You can't give in to the government, man. We're for God, yo. They don't actually talk like that. I don't know why I did that voice. But
I don't know what that was.
Yeah, so Church of God is like that. Except it's the entire leadership and membership that are saying, no, we're going to meet anyways because the government is persecuting us. And would Jesus close down? Would Jesus stop going to church on a Sunday? You know,
have they heard of Zoom? Do they know what Zoom is? It's lots of other churches. There are a lot who have defied orders, but lots of them have also figured it out, you know? And honestly, I don't know. I like not leaving the house, even though Zoom kind of sucks, but like, you know, there's benefits.
Yeah, and as anyone knows, church is pretty boring. So I think for them, a lot of what they like... Okay, so 2 things. One, you know, they want us to have the community because that's the big draw for churches. You know, you get to meet new, you know, families, friends, all that good stuff. And then also a lot of Christians, especially Protestants, have a persecution complex. You know, if you've read the New Testament, a lot of it's filled with the first Christians being... killed and their faith being outlawed.
Oh no.
There was this book called Jesus Freaks, and it was essentially like a pornographic depiction of Christians being killed in different countries, usually as missionaries and whatnot for their faith. And so we're a secular nation, so there really isn't that risk of it. So whenever there's like even a hint to Christians of this persecution, they're like, oh, it's my turn to be up, to stand up for the faith and show God just how cool I am. So obviously the problem is that you're helping spread a pandemic and really just shooting yourself in the leg there, because the longer this pandemic goes on, the longer your churches are going to be closed. So
yeah, but the pandemic is fake, so not really a good argument there, friend. Nice try though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. They think they think that the world is against them, and so the pandemic is to hurt small businesses and get rid of Christians, I guess. I don't know. It's very conspiratorial, very persecution complex heavy. So the Church of God is a very conservative church. One of their ex-members described it as a cult. And when I describe this church a bit more, you'll probably agree with me on this. But they've been in the news because they've repeatedly ignored instructions, health notices to close.
Public health orders.
Forgot the word there. They might be fine. Oh my God, there's noise in the background. So loud.
Is it mine?
Nope, it's me.
Okay.
Roommates, folks, this is always the perennial problem with this podcast, but whatever. Anyways, so they're being threatened with fines of up to $1 million for continually ignoring these public health orders to close. And in the CBC article on them, there's a guy who took a picture of these two congregants who were driving into the church, and they have the biggest shit-eating grins on their face. And they're like, yeah, that's right, government.
Yeah.
That's right, Trudeau.
Got him.
You won't stop me from being a Christian. Nuh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. And yeah, they've been in the news multiple times over the past year or so. Yeah, I think they were the place where one of the first big anti-mask rallies was had. Well, it was in Steinbach. But, you know, had a couple hundred people show up there. I think one of the pastors, at least one. Are they pastors in this church? Is that how they?
Yeah, you can use that word.
I want to be respectful of how they identify, of course. So if they, is it pastors? I can't fucking remember.
Just call them pastors.
Yeah, that's what they are. Yeah, I know one of them was there. And I think he specifically got a fine. It's like, oh, I don't care. I would do it again. And then he did. And yeah, kept doing it. We'll say initially, like, yeah, I mean, there's the public health orders, but like they were still doing things, you know, and monetarily they've had a couple of grand in tickets, but I don't know how much money they have, but I assume it's more than that. But yeah, the threat of up to $1 million is nice. I kind of don't think it'll actually. Like, that's the thing. That's as high as it could get, but I highly doubt it would get anything close to that. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, they're in court right now, along with, I believe, seven other churches. And they're saying that these shutdowns, you know, public health orders to shut down, are infringing on their charter freedoms of conscience, religion, expression, and peaceful assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, they are infringing on your rights, but they're not doing it just to be like, yeah, fuck you, Christians. Got them. Obviously, they're doing this to everyone.
Yeah, that's the thing. It'll come up in a story I have later. But yeah, there's been plenty of people who are trying to cite the charter and all of the things they're facing. But the thing is, there's actually a clause in the charter, which, you know, it's an exceptional circumstances thing, where there are times when those rights may not apply, or where you may have to rescind them or whatever, which I think, like, when I phrase it like that, yeah, totally bad. But, you know, it's a worldwide global pandemic, so, and like you said, it's not just them. This isn't a conspiracy against the churches and also the small businesses. It's sucks for all of us, dude.
Yeah, sure does, but of course Christians are so parochial. So this group, it's the Church of God Restoration, whatever. They have churches all over the world. They have two in Canada, I believe, Ontario, Manitoba, and they're led by 11 apostles.
Oh, okay. Oh, excuse me.
Apostles.
Apostles.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, they have pastors too, but I think they also have the apostles.
Okay.
And so the head guy is this guy named Ray Tinsman. He's from Ohio, or he is in Ohio now. And this church is an apocalyptic one. They believe that the world is going to end soon. Let me just talk a little bit about them. And a lot of this information I'm getting is from a woman named Tina Wall, who left the church after, I think it was 8 years in 2019. And she has some things to say about this church, which might be a little cringe, a little funny. Let's get into it, though. So the church has strict rules on what women can wear outside of the bedroom. They must wear white underwear and have dark stockings at all times when they're not in their bedrooms or presumably in the bathroom.
That's weird.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't think I would be ever comfortable wearing white underwear. Like, that's just, I don't get why that was ever a color people liked for their underwear. Why white? I don't get that.
Yeah, I agree.
For multiple reasons, you wouldn't want white underwear, right? So,
yes, I agree. White, bad.
Yes. And so, they also promote a belief called divine healing. And so this essentially is saying, like, if you are critically ill, instead of going and getting medical care, you have to call one of the elders and have them pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't disallow all medical care. It's only when it's, like, really serious. They're like, hey, look, if God's real, he'll heal you, protect you. So call up your elder. They'll put some oil on your head. They'll lay hands on you. And, and then you'll be dead.
Okay. So, like,
because it doesn't work.
If it's really serious, that's when they won't let you seek medical attention. Like, when it's the worst. Wow. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Well, their idea, so I have a lot of experience with Christians. I used to be one. And the healing thing's always been a weird thing to me because it doesn't really work ever. But, like, I know people in my family who believe healing works, and then they have these afflictions, like really bad ones that never go away. And I'm like, well, so how come that isn't healed? And then they say, well, you know, God doesn't want to heal that for some reason.
Hmm.
And it's like, right, okay, so God's just an asshole, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say, seems like a kind of shitty God, no offense. I mean, genuinely no offense, you know, go off. But
no,
also,
I mean offense. I don't mind being mean to Christians. I used to be one. I can be mean.
True, yeah.
So just call me Bill Maher, folks. Ugh. There's a lot to make fun of. I mean, okay, Christians are fine, but these people are really, ugh. Like, reading this article, like, just creeped me out. I can't stand this kind of Christian. Like, they're just, everything about them, it just brings out my deep revulsion. But that's probably due to my personal history, I guess.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. Or I'm just a bigot against Christians.
Wow, justified, honestly. No, it's not. Listen, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
I'm not sorry. So let's continue on. So these apostles apparently, so what they do when you first come to the church is they love bomb you. Do you know this concept, love bombing?
It's like a cult thing, right? Like, what you mean, they like just accept you so much and tell you how amazing you are and how you're meant to be there? Yeah.
Yeah, it's very persuasive. It makes people feel very welcome. And then, you know, once you're in the group, that kind of gets taken away. And what replaces love bombing is fear. Tina Wall and other people who are members or ex-members of this church cite very much how often hell is spoken of.
Mm.
Now, hell, folks, the lake of fire, eternal damnation, hell, folks, it's a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely taught about hell growing up, and it scared the shit out of me. The idea is essentially, if you don't know, which you probably do, but you essentially live in torment for eternity, unending torment. That could be fire, that could be darkness, that could be other people. That's hell. And it's very coercive, and so far no proof that it exists. But for these people, the apostles in this church, they say that they can take away people's salvation, so they'll go to hell if the apostles are like, I don't really like that. You know, into the pit you go.
That seems bad.
Au revoir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, and they really drill into the kids, you know, that you're going to hell and all that good stuff if you don't behave. And they're very conservative, very fundamentalist. And yeah, I mean, the idea of hell is a pretty preposterous one. But if you're taught it from a young age, it can be a hard fear to shake. It doesn't really make any sense. It's obviously one of the most like bullshit things you can say to someone. Like, oh yeah, if you don't do what I'm going to say, or if you don't do what I want, you're going to go and suffer eternally when you die. Can't prove it, can't tell you it's there, but trust me, it's there. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, preposterous. Mm-hmm. It could exist, you know, and if it does, you know, I got to be on my best behavior. Not because I want to be a good person, but because I'm scared of hell. So, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah. No, it's a terrifying concept, honestly. It's probably one of the worst things people have come up with as a concept. Yeah. Christians fucking suck, man. I'm not afraid to say it. I mean, I have Christians in my life I care about, but the ideology is pretty warped, I would say. Not a good one. Not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you ever leave this cult, you know, they'll disown you, they'll shame you. And when you're in it, in the Church of God Restoration, you can't really have any contact with people outside of the church. So very insular.
It's classic cult. Yeah. Like literally all
classic
of them.
Classic cult.
Yeah.
And just a last thing here, Tina Wall, one of the reasons why she left was that, because I think she's still a Christian, but when she left the church, the reason was that during times of worship, so when people would like sing in the service, instead of saying like God, like worshiping God, they would insert the name of like Ray Tinsman or like another apostle.
Yikes.
And they would start praying to him, to one of the apostles.
Mm.
And she was like, ooh, okay, everything else was fine. White underwear, all that good stuff. Praying to Ray Tinsman.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to pray to Ray Tinsman. Damn.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to pray to God either. Praying's boring, folks. Very boring. I tried it. It's just like, yeah. But yeah, that's about all I have on the Church of God. I hope they get fined $1 billion and never financially recover.
Yeah, they will. They'll be fine.
Yeah. And if you're looking for a martyr or like a persecution complex, come to me, baby. I can give you all the persecution you want.
Nice.
That sounded...
Yeah, that sounds a little... Like a sexual
sounds a little,
undertone,
little sexual.
Uncomfortable, but hey, go for
hey.
It. All right, so for our next story, we are bringing back Mad Max. He's back, folks. I'm
yes.
sure you missed him. We haven't talked about him in, I don't know, a couple episodes. Maybe we did, actually. Anyways, Maxime Bernier. I watched the Tucker Carlson interview, spoilers, but he said the last name different, like, Bernier, I can't even remember.
Bernier?
Maybe. All I remembered is that it was different, and I was like, oh no, am I doing it wrong? But I'm still gonna do it. So, this guy, our boy, he's had a couple of tours over this pandemic, which he likes to call Mad Max tours, over the country.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And who is he again?
Who is Maxime Bernier? Great question. He is the leader of the People's Party of Canada, which he started, when was it, 2019? Did he start
yeah,
at that election? Yeah, he did. Okay. So he lost the conservative leadership race, and then he was like, all right, fuck you guys. I'm going to start my own thing. And his own thing is like a pretty terrible cesspool of racists and weird libertarianism and just not a great... look, not a great party, and also he lost his MP seat, so, and he didn't win it as a leader in the 2019 election, so pretty pathetic, Max. Damn. now I'm done dragging him and introducing him. You know, he's somebody who fights for freedom, like, that's his whole brand, you know, freedom, integrity, like, he describes his party as the only true conservative party left in Canada, and he is here to talk to people. Like, he does these tours and he goes and gets people together and talks at them about People's Party of Canada, and I don't think he really says anything like new or substantial during these things. He kind of just quotes his usual talking points, you know,
a conservative not saying anything new. No.
Yeah.
No way, man.
Yeah.
He is right, though. The conservatives are pretty much liberals, except just a little more yuck.
I would rather say the liberals are pretty much conservative, more so than the conservatives are pretty much liberals, because I do feel the conservatives and like that bill we talked about earlier that they voted no on. Like, again, it's a pretty non-consequential. Is that the word? Inconsequential bill that doesn't super, you know, do anything to like fight Islamophobia. But to go against it even existing, you know, like at least the liberals are like, yeah, it exists and I'm totally doing something by introducing this bill, which is, yeah, also kind of bad. But the conservatives, I do think while we like to, while we can say a lot of the social conservatism, especially like the harsher aspects of it, have kind of faded into the background a bit, or they don't like to talk about it as much, I still think they're there. But a party like the People's Party of Canada takes it to a whole new level, and they are definitely very much conservative, socially, you know, anti-immigration, all that good stuff. But, yeah, back to our boy Bernier. Again, he's doing these tours. He has this whole tour planned for Manitoba over a weekend, which was starting on June 11th, which was last Friday. And he had, I think, over 10 towns and cities on the list, like Winnipeg, Steinbeck. But didn't go according to plan. So here's the thing. Before he even gets here, like every other province, I think we do daily press conferences for COVID and everything. And our premier, Pallister, isn't at everyone, but he was at this one, I think, on a Thursday, the day before Bernier got here. And he was like, yeah, that guy, Bernier, he's not welcome here. And also, if he does come here, he better be ready to pay. So kind of got called out there. Yeah, it's funny because Bernier said, I think talking to a reporter, like, Mr. Pallister, I like how he calls him Mr. Pallister. Is that a thing they usually do? I guess they usually call them
Daddy Pallister.
Yeah, Daddy Pallister used to like me before. I don't know what happened. And now he says I'm not welcome in his province, he said. And oh, this was when he was in Niverville. And I think that rally had about 50 people turn up. So, you know, not bad numbers for Niverville. I think they have like, I don't know.
Yeah, the whole town showed up.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's not so bad. And an attendee there assured him that he was welcome there. So thank goodness. And that was the end of the story. He was welcome and nothing happened.
Nice.
Yeah, he got his first warning. So he actually got a warning before they even arrested him in Niverville. Like the RCMP showed up and were like, hey, like if you do this tour thing, we're going to arrest you. And he was like, okay, you know, I think he had a video on his Twitter of himself reciting the charter, which we mentioned earlier, specifically, again, that section, the following fundamental freedoms, which are under Section 2 and the freedom of peaceful assembly. But again, as I mentioned, there's the whole exceptional circumstance thing, which you would certainly say COVID is. So he recited that to the officer and yeah, and then he was on his merry way. He went to the next location, which was St. Pierre Jolly's, just a little.
So wait, this officer was like, the officer warned him?
Yeah, yeah.
Like in person, like, if you keep doing this, you're on a jail, Buster.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh yeah, to add context, I guess, this was over a week ago. So here in Manitoba, COVID has been extra bad, and there were rules against gatherings of any kind, including outdoor ones. So I think at this point, they just weren't allowed at all, which is why he is violating public health orders by doing this. So that's why Pallister was like, hey, you come here and you're going to pay a fine or whatever. So only one more stop. We stop at St. Pierre Jolly's. About 9 people show up. you know, a whole...
All undercover cops.
Yeah, a whole 9 people. I think they were all real true supporters. And then the RCMP show up once again. I think he might have started leaving because it said he was arrested going down Route 59, which is the highway, like just off of that little town. Not it like goes through the town. So they were like, hey, get out of the car. I'm going to arrest you. And, you know, he was pretty, got out. He got arrested while also talking about, you know, this is just my freedom. All I have are my words and, you know, that kind of thing. And they put a mask on him, which was pretty funny, I thought. And then he went to jail for, I think he was in 8 hours, you know, paid bail, maybe got out, got on the flight home. Like, he was fine. He does have to show up in Winnipeg again, though, on July 27th, I think, to show up in court and, I don't know, pay another fine, I guess. Don't ask me how it works. But, yeah, that was his exciting Manitoba tour, which, yeah, after he got arrested and then released, he's like, okay, I'm leaving now. Despite all of the talk about freedom, I don't know, I guess he wasn't feeling it.
All right, boys, you won this time, but I will be back. Mad Max, Fury Road, this time I'm killing anyone who goes near me.
Jesus. Yeah, so I mean, it's a fun little story. You know, he flew down to Winnipeg, I believe, yeah, and left immediately. Again, you know, we have 14-day quarantine rule. If you fly from somewhere like Montreal, you're supposed to quarantine before going and seeing people. So he didn't do that. And then when he was done, he just flew back to Montreal again. I'm sure didn't quarantine. And yeah, and like nobody showed up. Pretty sad. He did go on Tucker Carlson afterwards, which if you've never, I mean, probably know who Tucker Carlson is. He's like, he's a Fox News dude. What would you say his title is?
He has like his own show.
It's a weird face, pretty bad hair. He also like really, really has not liked Canada throughout this pandemic, and he keeps calling us communists and that like our restrictions are too harsh. And again, whenever somebody calls us communist or socialist, I'm like, God, I wish. So yeah, the interview was basically just like, oh, first of all, he also describes Bernier as one of the most prominent political figures in Canada, which, I don't know, would you agree with that?
I think it's a slight exaggeration.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of hyperbole, I think. Just maybe.
A little bit. Yeah, maybe just a little bit. Yeah, it's a, yeah. So that was it was like a 3-minute thing. Tucker said it was ridiculous that he got arrested, Bernier, by the Trudeau government for complaining about its policies, which, again, I feel like we're conflating like provincial jurisdiction and, you know, federal, because in every province they've been dealing with COVID differently. So really this would be about Pallister, but Tucker doesn't know anything about that. Also calling like the powers that be or the government the regime. Oh, and he also said that, again, about like Trudeau, like he called Bernier his political opponent. Like Bernier really has any chance. He doesn't have a seat, Tucker. Okay? But yeah.
Yeah, no. Trudeau's really trembling about the resurgence of the People's Party of Canada.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Actually, Trudeau went down to Manitoba and personally arrested Bernier, and Maxime's like, What about the safe word? And Trudeau's like, not this time. Not this time.
I mean, that's what you
slapped on those cuffs.
Yeah, behind his back and everything, shoved him in the car. Yeah. I mean, that's what you would think happened from the way they talk about it. Yeah, it's just a goofy situation here, folks. Yeah. Oh, another thing. He did talk about some of, I think he talks about this to every province, but he's like, yeah, I want a PPC candidate in like every riding in Manitoba. We're going to get 4% of the federal vote. And I don't know what percent they got in 2019, but I would be shocked if it was anywhere close to 4%. Yeah, probably like 0.5 or something. So big dreams for our boy Max, but yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I mean, when I read the headline, I got a little chuckle. I'm like, yeah, good.
Yeah, that's about it. A little chuckle, you know, and he's not the only one who's been arrested for these kind of crimes, you know, public health orders. It happens, but, you know, generally, like, what, you're in jail a couple hours, you got a fine. It's not that bad, man. Chill out. You knew it was coming.
I don't know. The People's Party of Canada's coffers are probably running a little bit low, I would imagine.
That's true. Good point. Well, maybe he'll set up a GoFundMe, and you know what? We'll link that one, too. There you go. Equal representation. No, we won't. But, yeah, that's our Mad Max update for you.
Yeah. Pray for a boy, okay?
Yes, for a safe return to Winnipeg in like a month.
All right, so we're going to be talking about Annamie Paul. I don't think I have to apologize for my conduct last episode. Okay, I did have a bit too much to drink before the podcast, so I was really feeling myself.
Spicy, yeah.
Yeah, went out for food with someone beforehand. Don't podcast and drink, folks. Not a good idea. But I do have a genuine, like, revulsion for Annamie Paul's politics and just her function as a leader. So that's real. I'm not going to take that back. But, yeah, maybe I went a little overboard there, you know? I just don't like I just can't stand the centrism. Mm. The centrism is so...
It is.
And in the Green Party, nonetheless, it just bothers me so much.
No, I do feel you, honestly. Yeah, it was a bit strong last episode, but I get it. Like, at least with my thing with conservatives is, yes, they're pieces of shit. But at least you know what you're getting with them. Liberals, centrists, they're all much more sinister because, you know, they put on a face like they're progressive in any meaningful way. But they are very much not. In fact, they go kind of directly against any meaningful change. So I do feel you, even though it was a little extra spicy.
But I will say she does inspire a lot of hatred in people. So as we'll see in this
go on
addendum to what we're to what our last episode was, which was about Annamie Paul, a very short career, which might be even shorter after this story. We'll see. It's a developing story, so strap in, folks. You're about to see Angry Matthew again, but not really. No. Right. So the first thing, you know, a little background. So the Liberal or the Green Party, they have 3 seats in the House of Commons. Janika Atwin was one of those MPs. She defected to the Liberals last week. So now they're down to 2. That's Elizabeth May and Paul Manley. As well as that, there's also a lot of drama between what's called the Federal Council in the Green Party, which is the governing body, and between Annamie Paul. So the Federal Council and Annamie Paul is a member of the Federal Council, but as a new leader, there are divided loyalties in the party, and Annamie Paul is not very popular at this point with the Federal Council. And the Green Party is a bit of a mess right now still, and so let's get into it. A little bit more background too. What started off Atwin's departure, supposedly it's not too clear whether this was the real reason, but she did cite it, and that would be comments made by an advisor to Annamie Paul called Noah Zotsman, who is an advisor to Paul, at least he was before he stepped back from the role, because he said some pretty incendiary things on Twitter in response to pro-Palestine tweets made by both Janika Atwin and Paul Manley. He said, "We will destroy you," or "We will get you."
That is pretty threatening, to be fair. A little ominous. Like, what are you planning on doing, my dude?
Yeah, and he made accusations of anti-Semitism against them. And in response, Noah Zotsman was made to step back. His contract will not be renewed when it expires next month. So that's kind of... It's still kind of a messy story, but the further developments are that with Atwin's departure, a lot of people are thinking that perhaps Annamie Paul is not really the best leader to have in his party, because Annamie Paul was very kind of lukewarm on the Israel versus Palestine conflict that's been happening for the past month or so. And actually, a similar thing happened to Elizabeth May back in 2016 when she was against the BDS movement, which is boycott, divestment, and...
sanction.
Yeah, and sanctions. Which she said, BDS is a little bit too polarizing and divisive for me.
Mm.
And she received a lot of backlash from members of the party who were thinking, you know, we don't really want to be so pro-Israel, you know? And so one of the people on the council, John Kidder, he actually stepped aside from the role, I think, last month. I forgot to mention this last episode, but he's actually the husband of Elizabeth May, who was the former leader of the party. And he stepped away, and he and Annamie Paul were really feuding. But he's now stepped back. So, as well as John Kidder stepping back, you also have Leah Renaud and Lucas Nell, who stepped away from their positions on the Federal Council because, according to Renaud, she said, "I cannot, in good conscience, continue my support for Paul."
Mm.
However, she still supports both Elizabeth May and Paul Manley. So, last Tuesday, a couple days ago, well, I guess last week for you guys, but when we're recording of Thursday, this was Tuesday, the Federal Council nearly decided to vote Annamie Paul out of the party. They would essentially start a process for a non-confidence vote that could see her ejected from the role only after around 8 months of being the leader. However, this did not occur, and instead an ultimatum was put forward. A motion was passed that said both Paul and Paul Manley have to organize a news conference and put out a joint statement repudiating Noah Zotsman and to also express explicit support for the party's caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And if this does not happen, there will be a non-confidence vote on July 20th. And in response to this ultimatum, Paul said, "This decision will set a precedent for myself and for future members as well. I'm going to think about it carefully and thoughtfully." So as of now, she has not repudiated Noah Zaltzman.
Hmm. I mean, I feel like that's a pretty easy ultimatum in my opinion, especially if the party itself is pretty united in their pro-Palestine, you know, views. To have the leader also not align with that would be kind of weird to me, to be fair. But I also acknowledge, you know, she's a Jewish woman. And maybe, you know, I'm sure that does add another dimension to it as well.
Right. Well, the status quo in Canada is to support Israel.
Yes,
so,
very much so.
And as a centrist, as someone who's been in the professional circuit, both in Europe and Canada, I think her instinct is to be like, yeah, no, I like Israel.
Yeah. And
I don't actually even really know why she's a member of the Green Party, because she's not progressive in any way.
Yeah.
And this was touched upon in the article where they said, you know, the party is divided between numerous branches. They're all kind of guided by concerns for the environment, but you have like fiscal conservatives and eco-socialists
totally.
In the party. So,
yeah. Which is a mess. You shouldn't have a party like that, like just being guided by even, you know, the environment. Like you said, like, in my opinion, you can't be a fiscal conservative and be an environmentalist, but obviously not everyone thinks that way. And it just, then we get messes like this. And yeah, that's a good point too. Generally, Canada is very much pro-Israel. I think the only party that only recently kind of came out against Israel and as well, pro-BDS.
People's Party of Canada.
wouldn't that be funny? No, it was the NDP, but really that was only pushed forward because of the membership, and they had a chance to vote on it during their last convention, but Singh himself was pretty hesitant up until that point to really comment on it either way. So yeah, it's,
it's a hot-button issue. I mean, the Labour Party in England was essentially destroyed by accusations of anti-Semitism,
propaganda,
which came,
by the way,
that's a really interesting story, but that's not, it's nothing to do with Canada, but yeah, you know,
look it up.
So, you know, Annamie Paul, you know, if she really wants to stay in his party, she really has to reconcile with the federal council. However, that's not really happening, because it's not just her fault. The federal council also appears, at least some members, really to dislike Annamie Paul. And they wrote someone wrote a letter, and six members of the federal council signed it. In this letter, which was obtained by the Toronto Star, it lists a series of allegations criticizing Paul's actions and conduct as leader of the party. From the letter itself, here's a quote. "Since her election as leader, Annamie Paul has acted with an autocratic attitude of hostility, superiority, and rejection. She has attended few council meetings, and when in attendance, has displayed anger in long, repetitive, aggressive monologues." In response to the letter, Paul said, without addressing the allegations specifically, she said, "The letter writers wrote their letter with no substantive consultation with the members they represent. They produced a list of allegations that were so racist, so sexist, that they were immediately disavowed by both of our MPs as offensive and inflammatory and contrary to party ethics." But yeah, so Sean Yeo, who managed Paul's campaign in last year's by-election for Toronto Centre, he said, kind of expanded on the racism thing, and he said, "This letter," or he's like, "this is about deploying the trope or the cultural stereotype of the angry black woman. I don't think anyone who wrote the letter set out to say, I want to be racist and sexist, or I believe that this person doesn't belong here because of her identity. What they're doing is they're finding a different way to be able to safely express their, you don't belong here, attitude." So, thoughts on that?
I'm nodding along, Sean, my dude. I mean, he does put it in a pretty good way that I appreciate, where a lot of the because I feel like that's so often why racism is dismissed, especially in these environments, because it's not somebody literally saying you're a black woman and I want you out. You know, it's a lot more nuanced than that. So again, I'm not saying I'm entirely on board either way, but the fact that we just don't have any internal context. Again, this is all basically he said, she said at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is one of the issues in why it's hard to have a very full opinion because, so like I said last episode, I do sometimes kind of bristle at accusations of racism without substantiation because for me, it seems to appear to be a very cynical tool that can be used. I'm not saying that racism doesn't exist. I'm saying that as a political tool or rhetorical tool, it's pretty effective in this day and age, right? But I wouldn't be surprised if the Federal Council did have these unrealized biases against Anime Paul. I guess for me, okay, this is the thing. All right, so this is a conversation that kind of goes beyond race, and it's the idea that politicians act on ideology. And I think this is true, but what I really think motivates most politicians, and this is like going to be a very standard thing, but like money and power, right? So if you want to get, politicians are still people. They still have their biases and their issues and their ideologies and stuff. But I always tend to think like if a politician is making a reason or doing something for a reason, it usually has more to do with power and money than any kind of ideology or bias. But that's just my cynicism against people who go into politics. I mean, obviously there are those that are diehard ideologues, but for unnamed federal council people, I just, my mind instantly goes to like, what's the, you know, the whole follow the money thing, you know, like what's the actual benefit to going against Anime Paul, you know? But I mean, it could be racism because politicians are still people. I don't really follow.
And like, do they have to be, what's the word, exclusive? Like, can those not tie in together? Because I mean, certainly I would say in a society, usually it is marginalized people. I mean, they're marginalized for a reason under this society, you know? They face worse off conditions. It is easier to go after them and, you know, kind of make an enemy out of them or a monster out of them. I'm not really sure what we would call Enemy Paul in this case, but I'm not sure I totally follow, especially again. Like, I would much rather come out with just not an opinion rather than, this federal council that had a fucking Elizabeth May's husband on it and like has probably had the same people in power for years and like I don't know, like I just like I don't really want to come out on their side either, you know what I mean? Especially with no information, which is really all we're getting from this. This is, we have a single person from the party wrote a letter and this federal council, which already doesn't like Anime Paul, signed it. Okay. That doesn't really tell me anything. And then Anime Paul is keeping her mouth shut and saying she doesn't want to comment on internal party conflict once again and gives us nothing also. So I'm like, what do you want me to do with this, you know?
Well, you can conjecture. You can have conjecture. I mean, this is, we're not reporters. We're mostly entertainment. So that's why, I mean, if you're not comfortable having an opinion on this, you know, that's fine. I understand that. But I don't really feel like a deep responsibility to have like a very informed opinion. I'm okay to conjecturize. Can I make that a verb? I'm okay to have some conjecture because this is, I don't know. It's just, it's fun to talk about. I'm not a politician. I don't have to like coach everything I say or couch everything I say in like carefully worded statements. For me, this is like an off the cuff like thing, but I guess, you know, maybe I'm just an idiot too. So I'm, I don't know. But yeah, if you're not comfortable making or having too much of an opinion on this, then that's fine.
Oh, I mean, if I was going to come out on any other side, I will say again, like, the logic of what Sean Yeo said is there. Because again, I get that you want concrete evidence of racism and stuff, but most of the time, that's not how racism works, you know?
Okay, I know you said, like, concrete evidence in, like, kind of a like a goofy way.
Like, what, but you want an email calling her the N-word? Like, what do you even mean? That's the thing.
Well, I want something to substantiate something,
like
right?
Like what, man? That's the thing. Like, no, I feel you, well, but we're not getting anything to substantiate either side. So the fact that you're more willing to write off one side, you know what I mean? Like, how can you come out stronger on one side when you're going off of just what each side said?
Well, I'm going off my understanding of how politics works, and that is cynicism. That's what's guiding me the most is
cynicism.
And often
racism exists, bro. And it exists in every structure in society and will continue to exist.
Cynicism would say that issues of high importance can be used for certain means. Again, I'm not saying that this is what I think happened, but and like you said, like, it doesn't have to be exclusive. I can get on board with the idea that the Federal Council has these biases against Anime Paul for these reasons of racism. I can buy that. I can go with that. But for me, the guiding thing that's probably the thing that guides them the most is power and money. And of course, like you said, not mutually exclusive, but that's just how I see politicians. I have a hard time believing that politicians are as ideological as they say. I think they're mostly guided by money and power, which of course is
but he's gonna say.
You know what I'm trying to say? Maybe I'm not being very clear, but
I mean, I think most racism, again, isn't super guided by a concrete ideology that this group of people is bad because XYZ. It's a lot more subtle than that and much more rooted in just society and how we view the world and how uncritical we are of that and how willing we are to accept certain ideas of that, which is ideology. But it's not something, it's not like you're actively thinking about it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's where the disconnect is.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I just,
like, nobody's thinking here. I don't think anybody's thinking, like, Sean Yo says, you know, I don't want to be racist or sexist. I don't want to reinforce these stereotypes, or I want to, you know, I'm saying this because she doesn't belong here because she's a black woman. Like, nobody's thinking or saying that.
Right. No, I understand what he's saying. Okay, I guess maybe I should probably go with more of what you're saying, in that it doesn't have to just be racism or money and power and other things like that. I think I would fall in line with you then and say that I think racism does play a role, but I would say more importantly than that are these other dynamics. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I would end up falling on. Pure conjecture, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
God, my roommate's shouting. Why are women so loud?
misogyny, am I right, fellas? Pour one out.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But the story kind of continues a bit. So after Atwin's departure, because, you know, she went to the Liberals, Paul accused Trudeau of undermining her leadership and betraying his feminist beliefs and stances in going against him, or in going against her, sorry. She said, "Politics is politics, but it does not have to be cutthroat politics. It does not have to be at the expense of the leadership of someone like myself, which he has recognized as a historical leader. He should be able to meet me on the battlefield of ideas, as opposed to this kind of backroom battlefield." That's a pretty lame response, honestly. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Battlefield of ideas. I mean, yeah, Trudeau totally isn't a feminist. So true.
No, of course not.
True. I still don't really know that much about Atwin's departure. Like, again, I guess it was in talks for a while, right? Or, like, because the implication here is that Trudeau is like, hey, like, you know, we can take you. It's also weird that she can just, like, transfer parties and still have her MP position in this.
That's happened before.
Yeah?
Oh yeah.
It's weird, man. What? From which? Who's done this? It's weird. But
yeah. I just know it has happened before.
Okay. Well, I assume it would be like Liberal NDP or NDP Liberal, not Liberal Conservative. Though I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
I think that's happened before, or vice versa or something.
Basically
yeah.
the same party, yeah.
Because again, it's not so much ideology, it's the power and the money that you can accrue in these positions.
Yeah.
I think my issue with her comment here is, okay, so there's two things, right? So as a public-facing statement, I get it makes sense. She's like, yeah, Trudeau's playing dirty pool, you know? But literally, politics is backroom dealings. That's what it's always been. I don't like it, but you know, her being like taking the high road and being like, I wouldn't do a thing like that. Yeah, that's because no one wants to join the Green Party. Although Atwin, so Atwin left and she says some fairly pro-Palestinian things on Twitter. However, now that she's joined the liberal camp, she put out a statement on Twitter.
I should have known.
I know.
No, go ahead.
So part of her statement reads, my words regarding the conflict of Israel and Palestine were intended to send strength and love to peoples I believe are in need of support. Okay, her grammar's a bit weird there, but that's not my fault. Continues, Palestinians are suffering. Israelis are also suffering, as well as their loved ones in Canada and around the world.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly,
Palestinian suffering.
She's way more sleazy than Paul to me right now. Like, that is...
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
fuck Janika Atwin.
That is pretty bad. To frame that as, like, one of the biggest issues why he left. And to go, which Annamie Paul made this point in several interviews, which is right, that the Liberal Party certainly isn't more or at all pro-Palestine. And then she does this. My God.
Yeah.
Oh, disgusting.
Yeah, well, she fits in with the liberals, you know, pretty two-faced. Good for her, yeah. You know.
Well, she has to appeal to all sides now, so yeah, that's how it goes.
I just love, like, Israelis are also suffering, as well as their loved ones Canada and around the world.
Like, what?
What does that mean?
I don't know
what
that means. And also, wouldn't you say the same about, I don't know, Palestinians? Like, there are Palestinians in Canada. Does she know this? Like, around the world? Like,
yeah.
What?
In downtown Vancouver, there's a huge protest against Israel and for Palestine that took up, like, quite a few blocks and so many people. So, like...
Nice.
Yeah, her bias is really showing here.
Oof. Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah.
Big oof.
So, yeah. And in reporting, I've heard both that Janika Atwin's departure had nothing to do with Israel, and also that it did. Again, because of my cynicism, I think it has more to do with opportunity rather than ideology.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Fair.
But, yeah. So that leaves us, you know, with the Green Party in shambles. It's possible that Annamie Paul might be like, you know what, fuck your ultimatum. You know, if you want to vote me out, vote me out. And honestly, that's a Chad move. I would respect that.
Chad move. Yeah, I mean, and it would be...
Alpha move. I would respect it.
It would be a several month process too, right? To be fair. So it wouldn't be like immediately she's kicked out, but they would have to go... They would just essentially have a leadership election again, right? Because it's a no...
Yeah. If the vote passed against her, then yeah, she would be adios.
Okay.
But this is the thing, right?
Oh, right. And then they get an interim. Right.
Right. Yeah, interim leader. So this is the thing, right? We actually, a lot of what I've been reading is that a federal election will be happening this fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been seeing that too.
Yeah, the rumblings are out there, folks. Federal election. Trudeau's feeling himself. He's like, yeah, I'm going for that majority, baby.
Oof.
And a lot of, like, editorials were like, oh, now that the Green Party is down and out, the Liberals will certainly... It's like
the Green Party
was never a problem.
Yeah, they're
Shut
not
up.
Really the, the threat here with now their two whole MP seats, you know, one moving to the other side. And like, that, if they're having an election, that's not the cue they were waiting for. Definitely not.
No, they're like, oh, God, the Greens.
Oh, we don't
the
have
Greens
to worry
are down.
About Annamie Paul anymore. Phew. Like, no.
Yeah. So I don't actually think the Green Party would vote out Annamie Paul, even if there is this huge tension. Because if there is a federal election and there's only an interim leader,
it's true.
My God. I mean, the Greens are done.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Annamie Paul and Maxime Bernier can get a beer and, you know, drink their sorrows away together.
She would. Wasn't she? I think there was like a photo shoot with her and Erin O'Toole on the importance of working together. It's like, okay, you can stop that.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a dirty centrist, so.
Disgusting.
And dirty in the sense that she has no real ideology. It's all a game. It's all a profession.
Yeah.
And again, that's why I don't like Annamie Paul. It's not because I'm racist or sexist. Although I can use my own words against me and say that it's not mutually exclusive. I don't know. I might have to go out into the wilderness to do some soul searching. But yeah,
nice.
I genuinely don't like Annamie Paul.
Yeah.
But if she stood up to the federal council, I might be like, okay.
Respect.
All right, there's, yeah.
Yeah.
Respect.
She had some integrity or, you know, something she's willing to stick to. Yeah. Guess we'll see. We will see.
But yeah, any concluding thoughts there, Taylor, on the episode?
Episode as a whole, yeah. This is a good one. Yeah, the sad story at the beginning. I'm sorry again, y'all. And I know we didn't have much to add, but hey, like, it's a shitty thing that happened, and it's important to talk about, and also talk about how bad politicians are. And throughout this episode, I think politicians have been pretty bad. So, you know, nothing new there. Just keeping it up.
I do want to address an issue on the podcast, and that's the lack of clips. You know, I know you all used to love clips, but the reason I stopped doing it is because, one, I'm pretty lazy.
Yeah.
Two, I don't want to get issues with copyright and whatnot.
Mr. YouTube himself, or whoever else does copyright things. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, again, it's mostly laziness. And honestly, I don't know how much they actually add to the show. But, yeah, that's why they're gone. I feel like I should address that. If you've been a loyal listener, yeah, thoughts on the episode, thoughts on what happened, I already said them, so no concluding thoughts for me.
Yeah, GG.
All right. Okay, so yeah, so our next episode, we're going to be talking about the Kiel Burgers, the wee scandal, folks. We're finally going to talk about it.
Woo.
You know, we're actually liberal stands this whole time, and we just were like, we can't talk about the wee scandal. But we will. We'll go into a full episode on them, People Kind of Canada. That'll be next Tuesday, so look out for that. And as always, you can find our episodes on peoplekindpolitics.com. That's peoplekindpolitics.com.
Mm-hmm.
We release an episode every Tuesday.
Pretty much, yep.
And from our website, you can find links to listen,
that
but not
correct.
To watch.
No, no video for you.
No, no, you can't see us two uggos, okay?
No. Absolutely not. Never. Never.
Just imagine we're very, very good looking.
Totally.
Just imagine that I look like your dad.
Oh, no. That's enough of this podcast for now.
Okay. I guess I'll close it out. Taylor, as always, this has been your place for Canadian regurgitation.